Wake up! It's time for a pro-American jihad! This is Uncle Dave saying, welcome to the right-wing redneck radio rag. Yes, my fellow citizens and the legal residents, our great nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and the rights, responsibilities, and restrictions granted to and placed on individuals and all levels of government are spelled out in our Constitution. These are the reasons the United States of America rose to become the greatest nation in the history of the world, regardless of what our defamer and chief says. They are the only means by which America can regain and retain its greatness, and they are under serious attack from dastardly enemies, both foreign and domestic. The good old boys and girls here at Right Wing Redneck Radio are dedicated to the defense of those principles and our Constitution. Political correctness is like trying to pick up a turd by the clean end, and I won't do either. So if you're overly sensitive, better change the station right now. Fair and balanced? No, not on this show. The nefarious mainstream news media constantly pimps the left-wing loonies, promotes everything that is anti-American or that flies in the face of morality, and tries to destroy all that is righteous or constitutional. You'll hear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth on this show, humor notwithstanding. But I frankly don't give a damn what the moronic opposition thinks. If you're a left-wing ideologue, you're still welcome to call in if you can stand a good verbal spanking, but you'll not be spewing your moldering, ranted crap on this show. All right, let's get the program started, but let's set the mood first. On the count of three, give me a nice loud jihad. Are you ready? One, two, three, jihad! Alrighty then there, this is your old Uncle Dave. Boy, there's a lot of stuff going on in government, and sadly, a good portion of it is not necessarily good things, so we're going to have to do a little bit of chitting and chatting about that and see if we can't figure out some way to help save our country and stop these enemies of ours out there roaming about trying to destroy all of us. And I'm joined by one of my favorite people. How you doing, Sister Peggy?
I'm doing good, David. And yourself?
Well, pretty good, except somebody broke into my car, stole a few bucks out of my armrest that I keep for bridge tolls and stuff, and my GPS. I mean, that's not a nice thing to do. I mean, I know we got the Obama economy to deal with, but let's not be stealing from other poor folk. That just isn't a good thing. Or stealing anybody, really. I didn't mean it that way. I don't mean go out and rob the rich. Obama's going to take care of that. But, and the middle class and everybody else that has a job. But anyway, so that wasn't very nice. I would encourage whoever did it to bring it back, but I don't think that's apt to happen. I see another number on my board here. I'm not sure. Is that Brother Jim? No. Okay. 713 area code. Hi there. Who be you?
Hey, David. This is Dale.
Well, hey there, Dale.
Hey.
How are you, my friend?
How you guys doing?
I'm doing terribly cloudy. How about yourself? I know you were busy house building there, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm still tearing the house apart, but I'm on the road back to the house to do the killings and stuff.
Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know who Dale is, he is the honcho with the Tea Party, the very first Tea Party, I might point out. And as dedicated an American patriot as it has been my pleasure to run across, and honor to have you on the show. So, Dale, I know you're on the road. You got anything special on your mind that you want to chit-chat about?
Not really. You're on the right wavelength. I enjoy listening to your program, and you're right on. There's something brewing. This government is so corrupt. You know, every day is another crisis. And, you know, we got to stand up and take our country back. I mean, it's high time the American people begin to get organized and say that we're not going to take it anymore, you know. And You can't sit there and play games and pretend like it's not going to bother you. And just like you did, David, I had somebody break in my car just recently, too. It's still my GPS. We call her Sharon, because she's always sharing information to us. And oftentimes I like to throw her to the side. But, you know, we have this hate-love relationship. But I lost Sharon once, so I have Sharon, too, now to navigate. But, you know, it's a sad day when people have to start stealing from each other in order to make it in the world. And that's what this government has done to us.
That's for sure. Now, there's talking about people standing up, there's a story that I'm not sure if it made the big news or not, but right here in my home state of Florida, an armed Florida mob set out last Saturday to drive out illegal aliens who are destroying our country. Now, it sounds like the act two of a horror flick, but nah, it's pretty much Florida's plan for saving itself. Now, nearly 800 strong, Floridians set out to defend their turf. 95% of them had never been involved in anything like this before, but they were determined to protect the land that they love. Dozens showed up for some last-minute training, and then they joined in the hunt. One commented, "We feel like if we spread out, we'll be able to find these menaces and get rid of them." And another one added, "They have the advantage. They blend in so well, but the state is offering a bounty to the most successful hunters." Now, let me ask y'all a question, ask both of you this. What illegal aliens do you suppose they were hunting? Do you suppose it was what we typically think of as illegal aliens, only the criminal element of them? Or do you suppose it might be those trying to impose Sharia law on us? What illegal aliens do you suppose this Florida mob set out to track down and get rid of? I'll ask you first, Peggy, ladies first. What do you think it might have been?
Gosh, it could be either one down there, couldn't it?
sure could be. How about you, Dale? What do you think?
Well, I think maybe it's misdirected. Maybe we should start incarcerating our lawmakers who makes it easy for them to get here and then put them on the payroll.
Amen to that. But no, actually, this story isn't quite as sinister as it sounds. Because Saturday started a month-long python hunt. Started Saturday afternoon. Yeah, the vast majority, 749, are just members of the general public who lack permits usually required to harvest pythons on public land. But they wanted to get rid of these very deadly, very feral invaders. I mean, pythons are not indigenous to Florida. They're not indigenous to North America. But a lot of them have escaped. They breed like rabbits. A 28 python.
Sounds like other illegals, right?
Hmm?
Sounds like other illegals, right?
Absolutely. And they have no natural predators. They kill and eat anything they can find. Yeah. They can even, you know, take on, not too large alligators and things and kill them. They kill everything. So they've just been destroying the Florida Everglades. State's offering cash prizes to whoever brings in the longest and who bags the most pythons. And they gave them a little training and came down to common sense: drink water, wear sunscreen, and try not to get bitten or shoot anyone, which seems like pretty good advice. Some of the hunters carried large knives and pistols on their hips so they'd be ready for any python to cross their path. And these snakes get more than 20 feet long and over 250 pounds. And they're destroying all the natural fauna in the Everglades. The recommended method for killing the pythons is the same for killing zombies. Shot to the brain or decapitation. Now, of course, PETA doesn't approve of that. No, no, no. But, well, you know what we think of PETA. But pythons are kind of like zombies anyway. And through their infestation is deadly to humans. It doesn't pose much of a threat to peoples, although smaller peoples, who knows. The snakes have no natural predators. They eat anything. So Florida currently prohibits the sale of pythons as pets. Federal law bans the importation. Like, that does a lot of good. And wildlife experts say pythons are just the tip of the invasive species iceberg. I think I could go right back to the first two suggestions I made. Anyway, roughly 2,050 pythons have been harvested in Florida since 2000. And according to the Conservation Commission, it's unknown exactly how many of these slithering monsters are in our wetlands, but there's a bunch. So I just thought I'd stick that in there. Oh,
isn't that a good comparison of the illegals all together? It's like, you know, they're here, you know, and they're going to do what pythons do. And the lawmakers have let them in the country. Now the lawmakers are feeding them, right?
Yeah.
So it's just amazing how the comparison is.
Well, Dale, let me introduce you to a friend of mine who just popped up. This is Brother Mike. He is head of the local Act for America chapter here in Central Florida. And, Mike, you're on line with Uncle Dave, with Peggy, and with Dale Robertson, who, whoops, I think we just lost Mike. Well, darn, Mike, call back. Don't go away. Shucks. Anyway, Mike is an amazing gentleman. He's an octogenarian and has more energy than college kids and is a very dedicated a patriot to the United States. So, Mike, I hope you'll call back in. Anyway, okay, Sister Peg, what's on your mind?
Oh, not a heck of a lot today. I've been pretty busy, but I did see, I don't know if you guys caught the story up in Michigan where they were going to give out Section 8 vouchers. Did you guys see that one?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, they were going to give out Section 8 vouchers up in Michigan. Only 1,000, well, 3,000 to 5,000 people showed up to get them. And guess what? Not a lot of the people didn't get them, and they started rioting. And, oh, it was a real mess, I guess. But I looked at these people because they showed the crowd that was there. And, you know, they were kind of young, and I'm there, gosh, I was working back when I was their age. But that just shows you if they can't get their free stuff, what their intent is.
Yeah, you were working. How uncool. Anyway,
I know.
We got a big push coming. We're in for the biggest, baddest coalition push for immigration reform that we've ever had. They promised to push it over in 2013. The groups are backing the overhaul. We know what that means. Say that the bigger and better organizations than in the past. Last month, the labor movement, surprise, AFL-CIO and some other warring factors joined the battle with them and affirmed a common strategy. And last week, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce said it would work with labor. Don't do that. Latino and church organizations to pass the overhaul this year, and Obama has sworn to push it through because, to him, illegal immigrants are just future Democrat votes. So that's what we got to look forward to there. So what do you think, Dale? You're right down there in Texas. You're going to see a lot of this crap. What do you think about that?
Well, you said exactly right. I mean, they see them as future Democrats. They can care less about the American citizens and how they're positioning America. All they care about is getting a vote. And whether it's legal or illegal, you know, they don't care, you know. And the problem is that there's plenty of takers out there. And if we're getting to the point, there is more takers than there are makers. And it's going to be a sad day when all these makers realize there's no, or all these takers realize there's no more makers, and they begin to try to divide the taking pot, you know. And I expect a big division that's going to happen. I can see Social Security beneficiaries losing their benefits to illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm. You know, going back to one of our founders, Thomas Paine, in his pamphlet Common Sense, wrote back in 1776, for those of you who are not real Americans, that's the year we got our freedom from England. And he wrote, and I quote from Sir Thomas Paine, "Government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. In its worst state, an intolerable one. Our calamity is heightened by reflecting that we furnish the means by which we suffer." Does that sound like it could have been written, oh, I don't know, yesterday? What do you think, Dale?
It sure sounds like he was talking about modern times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had such a great sacrifice for our country by our founders, and for us to take it for granted and realizing that you know, we're dealing with the same things they are. You know, and it's a shame that we've forgotten our roots and what's important, what makes the nation great. I'll tell you what, the pilgrims realized that a utopian society doesn't exist, It's when people are individually responsible for their own outcome in life instead of playing this collectivist game that they play to the destruction of our nation. I mean, they don't care about America. They don't care about the existence of our nation. They're willing to drive this economy into the ground, our nation into bankruptcy, and basically divide the spoils between all the other global nations.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. And, oops, my little phone would just made a noise. I'll get to it later. Speaking of which, have you heard, and I imagine you have, that there is a push to print a $1 trillion platinum coin? Well, even if it's ever made, its actual worth compared to its proclaimed value will be, I don't know, about the same as Obama's. But, I mean, why make it out of platinum? It's not going to be, you're not going to put $1 trillion worth of platinum with a coin anyway. Why not make it out of, I don't know, red plastic? That would seem more fitting. But again, if they print, or if they were to print 16 $1 trillion coins, national debt's gone. Where the hell do you think that's going to come from? You know, what that's going to do is devalue the dickens out of every dollar you have in your bank accounts, your retirement account, what income stream you have. It's going to take the price of absolutely anything and everything that you purchase and more than double it, which I don't think would hurt Obama's feelings. Did you hear about that platinum coin, Peggy?
Yeah, I did. I just couldn't believe my ears on that one. I'm there, oh, my God. What else are they going to come up with? But I don't know. I thought I heard somebody say that they weren't going to do it. They changed their mind, but then you don't know. You know, you can't believe everything you hear. But I hope they changed their mind.
I can't believe anything you hear if it comes from Tommy Obama. I think I see a number I recognize on here. Let me see. Jeff, is that you?
That's me.
Oh, wonderful. I want to introduce you, Dale, and Peggy, to a friend of mine. His name is Jeff Steinberg. You can find him online at a website called tinygiant.com. And to make a long story very short, I'll just turn it over to Jeff. But, well, okay, there's something else just flashed off my board. I think we lost Peggy temporarily. Jeff was born with no arm on one side and a 5-inch arm on the other side and deformed legs. He stands 4'6". A good case, you might think, for, Section 8, food stamps, whatever. Not for Jeff. No. He drives a Lincoln Town Car, pulls a trailer behind him, travels all over the United States, does concerts, pays income tax, I might add, and was recently nominated by the Artist Music Guild for 4 awards, 2 of which are Male Vocalist of the Year and Male Comedian of the Year. So if there was anybody who had a right to say, feed me, you might think it was Jeff. Not so with him. And Jeff, I just want to turn it over to you after that sleazy little intro I made. What's on your mind tonight, my friend?
I just come to say hello and to tell you that I think you're too tall.
I got the bumps on my head.
Have you ever heard anybody say good things come in tall packages?
That's true. You have a point there.
4'6". That's as high as anybody should be. Maybe that's the reason why the president is the way he is. He's just way too tall and the air is thin up there. And it's affected his mind.
Maybe that's it. Jeff, that being said,
the interesting thing about the whole thing is that being a person with a physical disability and working, I don't qualify for any of the things that the government offers to those who refuse to work, such as free health care and that sort of thing.
That's true. Jeff, would you like to tell our listening audience what happened on your 18th birthday? That just absolutely amazes me. And if you don't want to, that's okay. But if you do, or
no, that's
you
fine. That's fine. You know, some of your audience probably will remember the day, especially the guys will remember the day when they turned 18, because on that day we all got a letter in the mail from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and mine said, "Dear Mr. Steinberg, greetings from the President of the United States. you are hereby ordered to report to your local draft board. So I did. I walked in the draft board. I had the letter in my artificial hook because I have no arms. And I handed the letter to her and I said, here I am, sign me up. She looked over her glasses at me, you know, the kind that kind of look over their glasses while they hang there on the end of their nose, you know. And she looked over her glasses at me and she said, sign you up for what? And I said, I'm here to win the war. Can you see me in khaki green? I'm about 4 feet 6 inches tall, one leg shorter than the other. I wear an artificial arm on one side and nothing on the other side. I said, I told somebody once, I said, I'd salute and give myself a concussion. So she said, sit down. And I said, so I did. And so she started to ask me stupid questions. Well, for example, she said, name? I said, it's on the letter. Dear Mr. Steinberg. That's me. Age? Well, let's see. You only get the letter if you are 18, so take a guess. Address? I said, and how do you think I got that letter? Social Security number? And I leaned over and I told her, I said, in a hushed voice, I said, I'm socially insecure. Classification? And I quoted from the UMJC, the Uniform, UCMJ, I'm sorry, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And I said, 4F. And I quoted it from there. I said, physically/medically unfit for military service. And Dave, she stood up. She turned and she looked over her glasses at me and she said, do you have a doctor's statement to verify that you are unfit for military service? And I said, no. I said, do I need one? And she said, oh, dear. She said, I'm going to have to get the supervisor for this one. And I said, go ahead, because I'm going to be this way when she gets here, too. And I've been that way ever since.
Oh, my goodness. Oh my!
I was parking my car one day in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I was in downtown Allentown, and I chanced to park my car in front of the U.S. Marine Corps recruiter's office. And I, just as I was getting out of my car, I happened to see a couple of Marines in their dress blues coming out of the office, and so I quickly stepped up in front of them, and I said, excuse me, gentlemen, and they snapped to attention. I said, I understand the Marines are looking for a few good men. To which they replied, yes, sir, we certainly are. And I said, well, that's great, because I've got enough spare body parts in my trunk, arms and legs, that I think that we could probably manufacture a few. They didn't get it. I told that story a number of years later in Manassas, Virginia, and a U.S. Air Force colonel was sitting on the front row, and he blurted out, and he says, that's why they call them jarheads. People
and we
think
have a corporate jarhead online with us in the forum.
Well, but see, that's where our society has a problem. And all kidding aside, I mean, I grew up, and fortunately for me, I grew up at a time when life was considered valuable, when life was considered sacred. I was raised to be, you know, to believe that I was given opportunities, God-given opportunities, and that I should use those opportunities, those talents and those gifts. But today we've got an attitude of if a child is born with a disability or if a child is disabled by circumstance or by attitudes or by relationships or by something, that they shouldn't have to struggle. They shouldn't have to fight their way back. That, you know, the kindest and nicest thing we could do is put them out of their misery. Well, the fact of the matter is, I'm married. I have children. I have grandchildren. I drive a car. Somebody asked me once, they said, how do you drive? I said, fast.
He does, and, too.
Yes, I do. Yes, David knows how fast I drive. I like to drive comfortably, both feet flat on the floor. I have a left foot gas pedal and a brake extension pedal. I'm a singer. I'm a humorist. I'm an author. I have a book called Masterpiece in Progress that was written. It's my autobiography about my life. And I would stack my life up against any doctor, lawyer, congressman, or senator, because the quality of my life is just as good as the quality of anybody else's. And that's one of the messages that we deliver, that you can't look at a person who has a disability and say he shouldn't have to fight or he shouldn't have to struggle to be a success in life. Because and you hear that coming from our society, you hear that coming from our government, saying, well, you know, nobody should have to struggle. We want to hand it to them and, you know, give it to them for free. You know, but...
Jeff, we've been rejoined by my friend Mike, who is, I mentioned, is head of the local Act for America chapter. And Mike, right before I introduce you to Jeff and Dale Robertson, who's head of the very first Tea Party ever, I would like to slide in one more plug for Jeff, because Jeff does incredible concerts.
That's the gentleman you travel with occasionally?
Yes. I would have had the honor and privilege of...
Jeff, David has told me so much about you. You're amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I would encourage anybody...
I've enjoyed working with Dave. He's a lot of fun to be with.
Yeah, Dave's a good guy.
Different, at least. You have to give me that. But Jeff puts on an amazing concert. I was honored and privileged to travel with Jeff. To be kind of sort of a little personal assistant, though he doesn't need very much assistance, I can tell you that, and play piano on some of the concerts. So it was an honor and a privilege for me. But if any of you know of, and Jeff travels coast to coast in Canada and also overseas in the UK and does concerts, he's personal friends with Billy Graham and Pat Boone and a few others. But if any of you know a church, doesn't have to be a huge church, but or an organization that could would enjoy and benefit from an absolutely, teetotally outstanding, completely entertaining concert with great music and some really funny humor, and everyone would leave feeling like they left with more than they came in with, I would encourage you to contact Jeff Steinberg, which you can do by going online to tinygiant.com. Tell them where you heard about it on Right Wing Redneck Radio Rag. But hook Jeff up with your pastor or whomever and see if they can't put together a concert. You will be delighted that you did. Michael, you were here.
I appreciate it.
Let me flip it over to Mike.
Well, thank you.
I just listened in. I had a little crisis I was dealing with, so I missed a lot of your show, David. I wanted to call in, but I missed the first 20 minutes or so. So I'm glad I dialed in, though. And the only thing I'd really do is plug Act for America. We're going to have Dr. Norman Berdichevsky speak on Monday, January 28th. At 6:30 p.m. at a place
Monday,
that used
you said?
To be called, Monday, January 28th at 6:30
okay.
p.m. It used to be called Legends Sports Bar and Grill, 1380 South Orange Avenue, but they changed the names to Doc's Streetside Grill. And it's on the third floor there. It's free, and it's going to be an amazing program.
Well, I know Dr. Berdichevsky personally. He's been on the show a few times, and I'm honored to also call him a friend. And he is a professor at a large, well-known university that we shall leave nameless. But I've heard him speak before, and as I said, he's a friend. So I highly recommend...
He's a Renaissance man. This guy really knows a lot. You know, he does.
Yes, he does. So, and he's entertaining in the way he presents it as well. But you will come away again with a lot of knowledge regarding our country and Islam and the threat, and there is a threat. There's good and bad Muslims like everything else, but Islam, I think Mike would be the first to agree with me, Islam is pure evil. Did I say that right, Mike?
Absolutely. Here's how I say it. I view Islam into three parts. The first part of Islam is a written documentary, which is the Quran, the Hadith, and Sunnah, which Hadith and Sunnah together is called the Sirah often, which is the life and sayings of Muhammad. And the Quran, of course, is a book that they believe existed before anything existed in the world and was handed down to Muhammad by Gabriel. So that's the first part of Islam. The second part of Islam is what they call Islamic law, which is, has a name called Sharia. And if you say Sharia law, it's like redundant. So it's Sharia is Islamic law. And the third part of that is the Muslims themselves. Now, Muslims range from being very nice, patriotic, loving, kind, to middle of the road, to a very, very evil, wicked, just like all human beings, there's a range of them. So it's very difficult to talk about Muslims, but it's very easy to talk about the Quran, or the written word, the first two, all the written words, and Sharia. Those are absolutely evil, because you can quote from them, and they are absolutely evil. And so what we try to do is not attack Muslims, because we don't know where they really stand, but we do love attacking Islam. It is completely ridiculous, and it will be, it's not redeeming for anybody. I'll give you one example. Islam, there's a passage in Islam, I don't remember the exact quote, but it goes something like this. For all the men, you're allowed to have sex with up to your four wives, and what your right hand possesses, and what your right hand possesses is female captives that you captured in war. And they are your slaves. And whether they're married or not doesn't make any difference. You can have sex with them. So really what it says in Islam, that you can have slaves and you can rape women. Absolutely, God would not say that about anything. Slavery and raping women, zero tolerance from God. So this cannot be from God.
Oh, I could not agree more heartily. We have another call. Let me check in and see who it is briefly. If you have a question for one of our guests. 215 area code. Hi there. Who are you and where are you from?
How you doing? This is James calling from Philadelphia.
Well, hi, James from Philadelphia. What's up? Do you have a question for one of our guests?
I just tuned in. And I just heard the part when you were just talking about in Islam you can't have up to four wives. So I don't know exactly what the topic is, so I don't want
to... I will go ahead and read it for you. I'll get it. I'd never ever like to do anything without having an actual fact. So well, I like to be very factual, so give me a second.
I'm aware that you have up to four wives in Islam, but I'm just saying that I don't want to make a comment that's off your topic. I just called in, so I didn't really hear. That's the only part that I heard was when you were talking about the wow. So I don't know exactly what is the topic. That's what I'm basically asking.
Oh, we've been all over the board. I'm sorry you missed one of our guests. We had the tiny giant on board, who was a gentleman born with no arms and deformed legs and stands 4'6". But he travels internationally as a performer, in churches and organizations, and does concerts. He sings. He was nominated for Male Vocalist and Male Comedian of the Year. What an inspiring guy! Check him out online, tinygiant.com. I'm sorry you missed that. Now, Mike, go ahead and finish what I just kind of threw that in.
No, that's right. What happened is we were talking about we have an organization called Act for America. I'm sure that you probably have one in Philadelphia too. And what we do is we try to educate people on the religion of Islam. But as I said before, we love Muslims, the people, because they may range from the very loving, kind, patriotic, to middle of the road, to violent people. And the violent people, and all of them, we believe, are just deceived. And we said that there's literature in Islam, and it's the literature that we're attacking, and not the people. So we're attacking a belief system and not the believers, because we believe they are just deceived. So we know that Islam has brought misery throughout the world. There's been over 240 million people killed by Islam in the last 1,400 years. And if you look at all the Muslim countries, every border of a Muslim country is rife with war and killing and murders. And Muslims, there's 120 sects of Muslims, and each sect hates the other sect because they don't believe they're in true Islam. And they have something in Islam called apostate. And if somebody's an apostate, leaves the religion, you're allowed to kill them. So Sunnis believe Shiites are apostates. Shiites believe Sunnis are apostates. So you go to Pakistan and you look at all the killing in Pakistan. It's really Muslims killing Muslims. There's bombs going off everywhere. And we don't want that society in America. We just don't want it in America. So that's
how it works. Am I still on? Hello?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Can I make this comment with all due respect? How is America? I mean, I feel as though that sometimes when people make comments on certain issues that's going on with other people, like, is America really in a position to, in a moral position to comment on what's going on around the world?
Well, I think we have a freedom of speech.
It could be said about, for example, about the Christians, that they facilitated slavery, that they go around from the time of from the time the Spanish began to colonize the Western world and different areas of the West Indies and the annihilation of the Native Americans. I mean, you could say that, well, for the past 2,000 years, the Christians, and I'm pretty sure far exceed those deaths of the Muslim world. So, I mean, are we in the moral position to even begin to try to critique what's going on in the Islamic world?
James, you ask a very, very, very good question. Go ahead, David.
Well, as Mike pointed out, there's good and bad Muslims, there's good and bad Christians. Actually, there are no bad Christians. There are people who profess to be Christians but aren't. They're like, we say, a rhino, Republican in name only. Well, these are Christians in name only. But if you are a Christian, then you follow the teachings of Jesus. And Jesus said, love your enemies. Pray for those who despitefully use you. Where Islam teaches, kill the infidels. And they are very specific about it. And I'm not talking about the Muslim people. I'm talking about what's taught in the Quran. What's taught in the Quran is Quran 9:5. I can quote the verse. Seek out the infidel where you may find him and strike him on the neck with your sword. That is taught. That is supposedly a message from Allah, who is the Arabian moon god, the only true god that there is in Islam. So Islam is pure evil. And America is not an individual, it's made up of people. And thank God and thank our forefathers that we do have the freedom of speech. I can say that I think Islam is pure evil. And no one can come down on me for saying that. A Muslim can come out and say that he thinks Christianity is a crock of crap. And no one can come down on him for saying that. So I think America is a melting pot of the best and, sadly, some of the worst people in the entire world. But we do have the freedom that is denied people in Islamic countries.
I'd like to comment on this gentleman's thing. Do we have the moral right to say something? That's a very, very profound question. Let me answer it in a roundabout way. Let's say I know my neighbor has a daughter and he's being incestuous with her. If I don't speak up, I'm complicit. So when we see evil, if we don't speak up, we're as evil as the evil, or even worse than the evil, because we're aware of it. That guy may be sick in his head, but we really do have to speak up. Now, through the eons,
but
that's my point.
That was my point. I mean, if you're going to speak up on that, I mean, first acknowledge what's going on with the Christian. We are, for example, we are 200 some odd years from the Emancipation Proclamation, but we have yet to really deal with the race issue in America.
Absolutely. Oh, you're 100%.
This is something that really we don't really engage. That's what I'm saying. Like, we don't really engage it as we should.
Hold on a second. My grandson is black. Okay, so I just say we have tremendous advances, but we still have people that are racist.
You're not understanding what I'm saying. You're not understanding what I'm saying.
Okay, go ahead.
What I'm saying is that we have yet to really
still, for example, in schools, we don't get taught the proper history of what happened in America as far as with slaves. Like, you know, we say our founding fathers, for example. You know, I'm taught about Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. They never
taught
me.
I'm sorry, say what you said again.
I was never taught that they were slave owners. So that's what I mean by we have really yet to really engage with
our own problem. Let me ask you a question, James. Let me ask you a question as far as engaging. What do you think about affirmative action? What do you think about different tests for promotion to the fire department for minorities and for whites, and minorities being black, Hispanic, whatever? What do you think about them being able to be promoted over white people when they score much lower on the test? What would you say about that?
Well, that is a situation that came as a result of almost 500 years of exploitation of a people.
Well, our country's not that old.
This is what you're trying to say.
I'm going to mute for a second because I'm not going to try to talk over you. It's my show. It's my rules. Here's the deal. You said we didn't address the problem. We over-addressed the problem. I'm a white guy, and my wife is Philippine. I told my son, who is obviously half and half, when you apply for anything, put down Asian, because right now you put down white or Caucasian or whatever the hell you want to call it on an application to college for a job or whatever, you go immediately to the bottom of the list. I traveled with Jeff Steinberg, who was on our show for a while here, the Tiny Giant, for a while. We were in several Bank of Americas across the country. We were not in one, not a single one, where the president of the bank was not a minority, not one. Because when Jeff goes into a bank, I don't know if you missed that part of the show, but Jeff was born deformed. He has no arms and badly deformed legs. He stands 4'6". And any time he goes into a place that is not handicapped equipped, he gets the manager out and tells him about it. He speaks up. He's, you know, dead on there. So when you say the problem has not been addressed, I would say it's been over-addressed. And I would call on, for backup, I would call on the astonishingly great American and comedian, and my brain left my, Bill Cosby, who has said, stop this affirmative action crap. Let everybody earn their place in society, or they're not entitled to it. End of story. Don't pat people on the back and say, oh, you poor little minority, we just have to promote you. Let's make you president of the company, even though you don't know your ass from a hole in the ground. No. Cosby said, earn your way and stop this crap. If you want to advance, improve yourself, work hard, study, advance yourself by your merits. So I think the problem has been well addressed. What say you, Peggy?
That's very interesting, and I do agree with him. I've been around quite a few years and have worked hard all my life, have worked with minority people who have really worked hard. And I think what happens is these people that are saying that they are being abused, blah, 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 they're being put down, really. They're not given a chance to explore themselves and see what they are capable of doing. And just like where I live, we have a lot of Latinos, and I'll tell you, some of them are the hardest working people, and they get, you know, what they want, and they work hard. But the ones that are raising all the heck are the ones that don't want to do anything. And they want people to feel sorry for them.
Let me say something. I'm going to throw it to Dale in a minute, and we have a new caller. Now, if you heard my intro, and some of you didn't, I said that political correctness is like trying to pick up a turd with a clean end. It's BS, it's crap, and I won't deal with it. Now, the word, the offensive word, and I agree that it can be offensive depending on how it's applied, one they call the N-word, the evil N-word. If you look it up in the dictionary, it is not racially specific. It has been used to mean that. But if you look up the definition of that evil N-word, It merely means someone who is of any race, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, Martian, Venetian, from the planet Jupiter. It's totally nonspecific. It just says a lazy slacker. And it is not racially specific. It has, in a lot of cases, been used to mean that. So let me tell you a very short story that a friend of mine laid on me the other day. I can't take credit for it. Those of you who are old enough, you might remember Gilligan's Island. Seven people, seven castaways on Gilligan's Island. Okay, we had the skipper and Gilligan. The skipper was trying to get the boat repaired. He worked. He came up with ideas for fishing and whatever. Gilligan was kind of a gopher. He did whatever job he was told to do by whoever told him to do it. We had the millionaire and his wife, who were like the psychologists and father confessors and the matronly people that soothed everyone else on there. Then we had the professor. He could do things with coconuts and bamboo that were absolutely astonishing. Then we had Marianne. Marianne cooked, she cleaned, she washed everybody's clothes, she worked her buns off. Then we had Ginger. Then we had Ginger, the movie star, who was convinced she was so beautiful and that her mere presence was enough to justify her entire existence and being pampered and being waited on hand and foot, that she was entitled to live off of society. Now I challenge you, rearrange the words, the letters in Ginger, and what do you have? You have that evil N-word. And does that apply in today's society? You bet your ass it does. And I do not, I repeat, I do not mean that racially. But there is the gimme, 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 I'm entitled crowd. I wish the Dickens they had all listened to Jeff Steinberg. 4'6", no arms, deformed legs, drives a Continental, pulls a trailer, travels all over the country doing concerts, pays income tax. I wish all these, oh, poor me, people had listened to him. And I, again, I strongly stress that the N-word is not racially specific. But do we have gingers in our society? You bet your ass we do. Okay. Now, James, quick comment, and I have another caller I want to get to.
Hello?
Hello, yes, quick comment, James.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that you muted me out. I was just going to say, you said a lot. I was just going to say my point in saying what I was saying is that before we could deal with what's going on with other people, we got to first deal with ourselves. And then you made the comment that, the N-word, and you get into a whole thing about that. And then as if then you went into the lazy people and all that. See, this is a problem.
You said, wait, give me a second here. You said you were talking about Christianity earlier being evil. Jesus said, do not try to remove the speck from your brother's eye till you pull the board out of your own. So that is Christianity. Deal with your own problems first, and then try to help your brother.
Well, one example of that is we have a black president.
It also tells you to be loyal to your master.
Hold on, let me finish. Just 1 second. Just to make a point that David was making in a different way. We have a black president, and the most racist group of that election were the blacks themselves, because they voted 98% for Obama, which is impossible to do, except that if you voted on race alone. That is a definition of racist, when you make a judgment on someone because of their race. So
that's not racist.
Yes, it is. Look at the definition. Racist means you're making a judgment.
No, that's being prejudiced. See, we gotta understand the different words. That's being prejudiced. I voted for somebody because he was black. That's being prejudiced. That's not being racist. Racist would be, well, because you're white, I'm gonna put you into this neighborhood with low public housing, and I'm gonna give you inadequate education because you're white. That's being racist.
Well, James, I'm going to flip to my other caller in a second. But being prejudiced, you can't be a racist unless you are prejudiced. I mean, they're the same dog's puppy. Okay,
I've got a response for David. So,
go for it, Dale.
It's like being the consummate victim. You know, you're being trained by the establishment that your particular race is a consummate victim. You're always the victim. Now, I personally grew up in the project, so whatever situation you want to say, you can be a victim or you can be an overcomer. Being an American requires the entitlement mentality goes away as an American. I had a friend of mine, she owns a movie studio, and she says, I'm retired of being black because I am not a victim of society. I'm not a victim of life. I will take life by the horns and overcome whatever obstacles in our way. You know, so the idea that we're allowing a certain segment of our society to become the consummate victim played by the liberal establishment, you know, so they can give a handout and say, like, well, you're just not good enough. I mean, because I grew up in the same environment that you're talking about. I mean, I'm not sure if you grew up in the project, but I did, you know. And so when you're saying poor education, I had the same thing, but I wasn't going to be a victim and be a, you know, and say, well, I'm going to blame my circumstances on my situation in life. I said, I will overcome my circumstances. So if I have a bad teacher, which I had many bad teachers, you know, I self-taught myself. So I got myself to where I'm at in life, not because of the circumstances that I was born into, but because I had the willingness to overcome the obstacles that I had. So I wasn't going to play the consummate victim. Now we have a society based on the establishment to say, well, these people are consummate victims. They're entitled to something because they're victimized. Well, I don't think we've had slavery for over 150 years. You know, so there hasn't been slavery for over 150 years. But, however, there's somebody in Washington that benefits with a victim class. And that's what they do. They pit one group of Americans against the other, and they'll tell you whatever you want to get your vote. And so you may call it prejudice, but if there was a white president in there and people voted for them, the establishment would call that racism, that you voted for a white president. And yet you want to play the game with words as well as prejudice. And you're right, it is prejudice. But however, using the same rules that the liberal left establishment uses, they would call you racist if you are a white man not voting for a black president.
That's absolutely right, Dale. I have another caller. Let me put him on for a second and see. This has been a wonderful show. Thank all of you for your participation. We have a caller who all I see is 1111111, so I assume you're calling it on Skype because it doesn't show your number. But where are you? What you got to say?
Yes, hi, Dave. This is Eric from Iowa. I'm in your chat room right now, and I've been listening. Yeah, I've been listening to your show. I listen to you mainly in archives. I normally don't come on to the shows and participate in the chat rooms and listen live. but this fellow that you just had on there, James, he's been calling into most of the shows this week. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. And he's a lot of the things that he's been saying on these shows are, I would say, disingenuous at best, and I was going to wait until this Wednesday to speak with him because he had called Eliza's show on Freedom Quest and had made a lot of statements. And James is a member of the Nation of Islam. He's admitted that. He's also come out and admitted that he's very similar to a gentleman, and he didn't say he was similar to a gentleman, but there's a gentleman that's on YouTube that says that he was studying to be a minister, a Christian minister, and became disenfranchised with what he had been learning about the Christian faith, so he turned to Islam as a viable alternative. And And anybody that makes that type of statement, as far as I'm concerned, is number one, disingenuous. And number two, they're feigning some type of indignity. Now, when he started talking about, you know, using the N-word and, you know, how that is a racist slur, if you go back to when, because he mentioned that there had been slavery on the North and South American continent for 500 years, and that in and of itself is not true. Slavery did not exist for North America anyway, until Jamestown, and that was the early 1600s. So it's 400 years.
Right.
So he's only off by about 100 years. And it was the Spaniards who introduced slavery and who developed the N-word itself, because if you look in the Spanish language itself, the word for black is negro. Now,
yeah.
If you look at, you know, how that could have derived into the N-word that we use today, it's accepted by most scholars. That's where the word originated from. So when you start talking to James about these types of things, I just want to provide you a little bit of warning of where he is coming from and what he's been doing on the radio.
Okay. He did a great job, James. I don't know if you know this, but you can Google it. The Islamic word for slave. The Islamic word for slave is, every black person has that name. Okay, so. I hate to tell you this, man, but you are really deceived. Muhammad cannot, your Nation of Islam, that read the story about the giant wheel in the sky. If you don't think that's ridiculous, so you've got a problem, man. It is beyond belief. And if you look at Islam religion itself, Google some stuff. Find out what's true. Learn something. We love you, man. We don't hate you. We're telling this out of love. And we're trying to save a soul. And I know that what you're trying to do not fan the issue of hatred. We love everybody. We've solved things to love. The Quran is a book of hate. Hate the Jews, hate the Christians, kill, 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 conquer, conquer, conquer. And they've been doing it for their entire existence. And I'm very, very knowledgeable. So I just spent 3 days at a conference. I paid a lot of money for it. And our 3 days conference was Christians trying to find out how to love Islamic people and bring them to Christ. There was no hatred at all. It was an amazing conference, and these guys are right on it. Thank you.
Peggy, you've been silent for a while. Your comment, please.
I wanted to thank him for calling in because I was having the same feeling that we were being kind of taken here, because I listen very carefully at what people say. And
Well, let me inject one thing here. We had the Perverse International Faith Day here, 18, 20 months ago. And lots of churches, Catholic cathedrals, and Jewish synagogues invited Muslims to come, you know, imams and what have you, to come and speak and explain Islam to their congregation. But do you know not one mosque invited a rabbi, a minister, or a priest to come and explain to their congregation a religion other than Islam? So it seems to be, okay, we're down to about a minute and a half or less, so even less. We have one call. I'm going to give you 1 minute. I'm going to give you 10. It's 610 area code. Who are you? What you got to say?
Yeah, how you doing? This is Bob. How you doing? This is Bob.
Okay, Bob, quick. We got about a 10.
Yeah, I wanted to know if I wanted to come to Christianity. I'm thinking about accepting Christianity. And I wanted to know, was Jesus a man of color or was he a pale man?
Jesus was of Arab descent. Jesus was a Semitic man. That was his race. Now, to base one's eternal salvation on whether or not somebody's white, black, Hispanic, Arab is about as shallow thinking as you can possibly get.
I'm not basing
sure
my
you
salvation
are. Sure
on
you
that.
Are. You're being disingenuous.
What I'm asking,
yes, you
no, what I'm asking is because you have a false historic Jesus that has been portrayed as a pale man, and you know this is a fact. So I wanted to know that if you guys are speaking true Christianity, would you say that, yeah, Jesus was in fact a man of color, or would you say would you tell maintained a lie that he was a so-called European or a paleface?
What does it matter whether he was white or black? That's what I'm curious about. What does it matter whether he was a black man or white man? God did every human being with all kinds of different colors and all types of different racial characteristics. What matter is that in the word when it comes to your eternal salvation? It matters not. Whether or not
we're
perpetuated by medieval artists.
We're down to 8 seconds. I want to thank each and every one of you for coming on the show. And please, we're going to do it again next Sunday. Same time, same phone number. Call back. This has been fabulous. We're done. We're off the air.
Okay, bye-bye.
But thank you so, so very much, each and every one of you. Feel free to call back. And I said each and every one of you, James. I mean you too. If you are, a member of Islam, that's okay. As Mike, so.
Hey, you unmuted me? Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
This is James. First, I want to clarify the accusations that was being made on behalf of one of the callers.
Okay, go ahead.
He was saying that he was making reference to the will, and he was saying, well, that's an erroneous belief. But, you know, when you look at Ezekiel, it's talking about the will. And that's where
Ezekiel doesn't
think
that there's a UFO circling our planet
right now.
That's what Calypso Luvi is putting out there. It's ridiculous.
I mean,
it's we could turn
to the chapter and we could see that he's referring to a spaceship. That's what it's talking about. But not the game.
Yes, and
that is
basic Jewish theology, and that is taught in Christian theology. Yes, you're exactly right.
That's going to get your own beliefs. I mean, if you're going to go against what he said. But nevertheless, you know, I find it that this Christianity which you so profess is not even the real Christianity.
And
want to get into it theologically, and when you look at the history of what Constantine did,
Constantine has nothing to do with Christianity, James. Constantine had nothing to do with Christianity. The doctrine of Christianity had been developed 200 years prior to Constantine. If you would read the writings of the early church fathers, Polycarp, and all of the teachings that he put out, all of the early church fathers, the doctrine and theology of Christianity had been pretty much decided upon and taught by the end of the first century. That was within 50 to 60 years of the death of Christ. So to say
that is not.
If you would know history, sir, if you would know history, you would be able to identify all of these teachings.
The concept of Christianity, the concept within Christianity existed long before the first century AD. I mean, you know, where are you getting this from? You know, the virgin birth story is not but a vitiated form of the story of Isis. Huh?
Okay, hang on a second, guys. Let me inject one thing here. Everybody in this country should read the Quran. They should, absolutely. But before you read it, know this. The Quran is not laid out like the Bible in chronological order by dates, you know, progressing. The Quran is laid out according to book size. The largest book first, the smallest book last. So unless you research it and understand it, you really won't know what you're reading. But there are...
That is not right. That is not true.
It's absolutely true.
What are you talking about?
Whoa, James, go pick up a Quran and you check it. And you see, count the pages. You see if the smallest verse isn't the last and the largest isn't the first. You will find that I'm right. This is real easy
The smallest chapter is... The first chapter is only 7 verses. That's Surah Al-Fatiha.
No. You're not looking at the
first.
They're laid out by chapter.
No. Surah Al-Fatiha is the first chapter of the Holy Quran, and that is only 7 verses. What are you talking about?
We're talking as if we know. You don't even know
what you're talking about.
I have a Quran in my hand. What would you like to tell me?
Read the first chapter, and it's only 7 verses.
There is a dedication. I have the Quran in my hand.
Please read it. You people saying you have a Quran in your hand. Read it.
I have read it. Now,
so you would know if you read it that the first chapter, Surah Al-Fatihah, is only 7 verses.
Okay, I'm they're turning to the first chapter. The four, I have met the foreword. Now I am at. Instructions to the reader. Turning. Doctrine of abrogation.
Yeah, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
The first chapter is like a kind of sort of like a foreword. Then chapter 2 runs. Oh my goodness! It runs and it runs and it runs and it runs. The chapter 2. I'm still going. Chapter 2 runs from page 3 to. I'm at page 29 and I'm still in chapter 2. Now, if you go to the last chapter, but here's what's important. Okay, chapter 3 starts on page 30. Chapter 2 starts on page 1. Okay, so we have 30 pages in chapter
2. What are you talking about?
Read it, my friend. I can't make this stuff up. I have the Quran in my
hand. I
just muted you, so you're going to have to listen, whether you like it or not. Chapter 1, as you said, is like 7 verses. It's kind of like a foreword or a prologue. From then on, chapter 2 is 30 pages long. And when you get to the very end, they are a page and a half a page, they're done. But here's the important thing to realize, that in the Quran, the revelations to Muhammad, he started off in Mecca. And he, after 10 years, could only raise roughly 100 followers. So the early chapters of the Quran, which are not in chronological order, but the early writings of Muhammad were very peaceful. Why? Because he didn't have the facilities to be anything other than peaceful. Then he moved to Medina, and he was able to raise a large army. Then he became a warlord. And so the Medina verses abrogate, replace the Mecca verses. And conveniently, Muhammad got a revelation from Allah, the Arabian moon god, who said, "We will not change or replace or delete anything from the Quran unless we give you a better one." So the peaceful Mecca verses were replaced, and they abrogate the peaceful Mecca verses. So Medina is where it says Muslim, and I'm quoting, it says Muslim, seek out the Jew wherever you may find him and kill him until even the rocks cry out, "Hey Muslim, there's a Jew hiding behind me, come and kill him." That is in the Quran. They're in the Medina verses. So when a Muslim, go ahead, Dale, go ahead.
Dave, this is Eric from Iowa again. I just posted in the chat room a quick link for James to look at if he wants to. I'm not sure if he wants to or not. But it lists when the verses of the Quran have been accepted by. And the most important thing to understand about this is when we look at the Quran, you cannot really read the Quran without examining the Hadith. The Hadith provide the explanations of what is being written in the Quran, because if you just read the Quran without the Hadith, it's just a bunch of gibberish is basically what it is. Because I've read the Quran too, and that's essentially what it is. Now, the order of the verses or the order of the surah that are the chapters that occur in the Quran are your statement that they were based upon what he wrote when he was in Mecca, and then when they made the hijra to Medina. That is absolutely spot on, and that is verified by the Hadith. The Hadith state this. Now, I'm not sure exactly where James is getting his information from. He's probably getting, I don't want to make any suppositions, but if you listen to what the Nation of Islam teaches, they're considered apostates from Islam in of themselves because of the teaching. So that's probably where he's getting it from. But with that said, if you look at the historicity of the Quran, this is a verifiable fact. All Muslim scholars, all reputable Muslim scholars will admit that the chapters in the Quran are based upon the length in which they are. It has nothing to do with chronology.
You're absolutely right. And it was so convenient how some of the things came down so that they would facilitate Muhammad's life. I'll give you an example in a minute. But here is a thing that is, I think, even more important, is that in today's world, in today's Islamic world, any person in a position of authority, be he an imam, an ayatollah, or a mullah, whatever, they can issue a fatwa at any time that becomes law to their followers. And one was issued 2 years ago by a mullah over in, I could be mistaken here, but I think Saudi, but if I'm mistaken, it really doesn't matter, but over there somewhere, who said it is okay to have sex with a girl, presumably your wife or whatever, whenever she is of substantial size to support your weight. That means a 10-year-old girl, it's fine to ball her brains out. Does that sound like it comes from God?
Well, that's exactly what the fatwas of the past have taught, and also what the Hadith teaches. The Hadith is absolutely clear about how old Aisha was when she married Muhammad. She was 6 years old. She consummated the marriage when she was 9. He was 54 when he consummated. And also, there's been additional fatwas issued concerning the practice of thying. Now, I'm not going to get into the physical details of that, but thying, that is your thighs,
oh, exactly,
and Muhammad. Imagine what goes on there. Yeah, there was a fatwa. There's been two fatwas by reputable Islamic universities that had said, yes, this is exactly what the Prophet did practice. Now, when we look at Saudi Arabia, and they issue a kind of that type of law, all they are doing is just following the practice of the Prophet and what he did. Because as in Christianity, our charge as Christians is to be Christ-like. Theirs is to be Muhammad-like. So when you want to follow the practice of Muhammad, there you go. That's where you get that type of law.
Well, you're dead on it. I know exactly what thying is, by the way. I've done my homework.
Isn't that sick? I mean, that's just sick. It's just something wrong with that.
You know, for anybody who hasn't, I suggest that you look up Ann Barnhart and watch some of her videos on YouTube. I love Ann to pieces. She is a marvelous individual. She has a video on sexuality in Islam where they mutilate women, genitalia. And one of the reasons is because they figure if sex is very unpleasant to a woman, she's not as apt to cheat on her husband, like they have a chance to anyway. But that was one of the reasons for it, why they stitch them up so that sex is very painful to them. One of the imams, whatever his title was, Ayatollah, I don't know, in Saudi here, three or four years ago, said that he was opposed to women having driver's licenses because if the women in Saudi could drive within 5 years, there wouldn't be a virgin left in the country. I don't know. How much more can you disrespect your womanhood than that? Peggy, comment. You're a woman. Give us your comment on that.
Oh, I know. I have read on their slavery of women. And it is so ironic that... can you still hear me?
Yes.
Like, oh, okay, because phones are kind of touchy. Yeah, and they've had that no driving for many, many years because I used to know a couple. He worked for TWA, and he got stationed over in that part of the world, and his wife went with him. And she was telling me it was terrible. She couldn't drive. She couldn't do anything. And they were so glad to get out of there. But the way they treat women is absolutely, absolutely horrible. And
yes,
I have seen Anne's that video you were talking about. Let me tell you, every woman in this country should see that video.
And every human being in this country should read the Quran. You cannot recognize the enemy if you don't know where they're coming from. Recently, while we're still on the sexual topic, recently, and I mean real recently, like a month or so ago, maybe three, maybe four, I don't know, I didn't write it down, But the new parliament in Egypt was debating, you can't make this crap up, was debating whether it should be law in Egypt that a man could have sex with his deceased wife up to 6 hours after her demise. Yeah. Now, does this sound like something from God?
It sounds like something that comes from the Hadiths, yes.
Yeah, well, now this was debated in the Egyptian parliament, or Congress, or whatever the hell they call it, when the Brotherhood took over.
Well,
Dale,
the thing that you were alluding to as far as women and female genital mutilation, that in and of itself, I think, is a clear demonstration or a great example of the insecurities that Muslim men themselves have about their manhood. When you have to put, I mean, when you have to develop an entire doctrine subjugating one half, I mean, to subjugate women, to force them based on eternal damnation and punishment if they don't, there's something just sick about that, and there's something insecure about the development of that type of thought process.
Well, look at the honor killings that are even going on in this country that I have seen and read about.
You're sure right.
Killing their own daughters.
Absolutely.
I mean, I read about an account down in Texas where this father was angry. They bring their daughters here to America, and when they start Americanizing and fitting into our culture, then they want to kill them. And especially if they get these two daughters got American boyfriends, and he absolutely went and slaughtered his two daughters, teenage daughters, and of course, his Muslim friends got him out of the country, so he didn't have to face our justice system.
Well, I live in Florida.
I believe that was a video made by a guy by the name of Joe Dan, "Live to Die." There was a song he had made, and he made a video, and it has that killing in there, and it just breaks your heart,
you know,
watching that.
Well, I live in Florida, and as you might recall, Rivka Berry, the young lady Muslim in Ohio. Who converted to Christianity and her parents wanted to kill her, she came to Florida. Now, I am happy to say that and proud to say that I am personally friends with her attorney, John Stenberger, and with her pastor here in Florida, Blake Lorenz. Both of them are friends of mine. She has won all her legal battles, and she's now 18 years old. So they cannot force her to leave the country, so they can kill her. She is in hiding because there is a death sentence on her if they can find her. She has cancer, which is in remission. So she's, you know, we pray for her and hope that it stays in remission. She is still in hiding and still a Christian, by the way. Because if she comes out, she's going to be murdered. So, I mean, you know, if you want to say that Islam is of God, then...
There's nothing godly about the teachings of that religion at all. I mean, if you look, and I'm doing a paper right now, and I'm very recalcitrant in dedicating time to it, but I'm writing a paper right now that identifies the practices when we follow the example of Christ and versus the example of Muhammad in accordance with God's Ten Commandments. At every single turn, Muhammad has violated those commandments, and yet Muslims are required to follow his example. Well, if you're following his example, you are sinning against God. Wouldn't that be just like Satan to inspire a man to lead people to think it is right to sin against God?
Well, I was privileged to give a talk comparing Islam to Christianity in a local church, a fairly large local church here about 3 months ago, and I told the pastor exactly what I wanted to do, and he said, go for it. Three cheers for him. We need more pastors like that. But and all I did was compare the Quran to the Bible, verse for verse. And in the Quran, it tells you, and I'm not making this up, you can find it, it tells you that Allah is the fastest to deceive, the master deceiver, and the greatest of the deceivers. Well, the Christian Bible says that Satan is the father of lies and the master deceiver. Could they possibly be the same one? Sounds right to me.
Well, I don't believe in coincidences. And the first, and you're exactly right. The first word spoken out of his mouth was meant to deceive mankind or to deceive Eve. He says, "Hath God said?" When he knew, in fact, God had not said the thing about eating all of the fruit of the trees of the Garden of Eden, but just that one specific one. So the first words out of his mouth to a human being was a lie. He is the father of lies. You're absolutely right, Dave.
Yes, and then the Quran says that Allah is the fastest to deceive, the master deceiver. So kind of sort of sounds like the same dog's puppy to me. I don't know.
Walks like a duck, sounds like a duck.
Then, then pluck him clean and make a pillow out of it. anyway.
Yeah, having for Thanksgiving.
Well, that too. But I was referring to ducks down, as in the little feathers that they make pillows out of. But, yes. Well, listen, thank you all so much. I'm going to go eat supper now. But thank you so much for participating. And, hey, we do this every Sunday, same time, same station. And we may talk about anything and everything. Politics, there's a whole bunch of crap we didn't even get to tonight. Colin Powell being one of them. I noticed some comments in the chat room about him. Tommy Bahama and Joe Biden and whatever. We are in a war, and number one, we're in a war against Islam. And if we don't wake up to it, they're going to win. I mean, it's that simple. They've won all through Europe. There's no-go zones. I have some friends in France, and they're saying 20 years, France is gone. It's done. It's over. No more France. It's all Islam. And the same thing is slowly taking place here. And for anybody who happens to still be listening, there is a what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't matter. In Islam, where it says lie to the infidels, it tells you when you are weak, be nice. When you are strong, be brutal. So Al-Taqiyya is the name of that philosophy. But it is taught in Islam, this is what you're to do. You are to lie. Now, the Christian Bible says, thou shalt not lie. Islam says, lie to the infidel, deceive them. I don't know. If you can't figure out which is from God and which isn't, may God help you. Okay, boys and girls. Peggy, thank you so much. You're always such a marvelous show.
And I didn't catch the gentleman's name that's been speaking.
It's Eric from Iowa.
Iowa. Oh, that's what
I'm still in the chat room. Yeah.
Yeah, he was from there. Yeah, well, thank you, Eric, for calling in. What you said, I kind of saw things being said that I thought, eh.
Yeah, well, I listen to the Radio Jihad shows in archives mainly, and James has been calling in all week, and he's been making basically the same type of fallacious arguments on other shows. And when I heard him on, he's just like, you know what, you need to get on there and try to refute.
Thank you. And
you
join us again.
I will. Thanks.
All right, and thank both of you. And I'm going to go make myself some carrot juice, but notwithstanding, I'm trying to lose some weight again. So hopefully I will hear from both of you next Sunday.
Absolutely. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Okay, good night, Eric.
near where they were.